don't let your curiosity for music end at the start and ends of your lessons, classes, and ensemble rehearsals.
This is Max Q, a podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for a working artist in today's world. Jobs, work-life balance, finances, time management, we discuss that and more on the Max Q podcast.
Hey, I'm Robin McGinnis, and this is a conversation with Ryan Tani, a 2017 graduate from Peabody's conducting program. At the time I interviewed him, Ryan was an active conductor for several ensembles in Baltimore, while also working full-time in the ensemble office here at Peabody. I was excited to speak with him about both his positions and the ways that they work together. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to just start off. We've got a couple of questions that we are trying to ask everyone just to kind of establish a baseline of ideas for the podcast. So the first thing that I want to start off with is, can you tell us a little bit about what your life looks like right now?
Sure. So I work full-time in the Peabody Ensemble Office as Ensemble Office Coordinator, and so that is my day full-time job. And then, of course, you know, as a musician, we have a secret life after work. So I have a couple of different positions that I work at. I work with the Chesapeake Youth Symphony Orchestra as the conductor of their Preparatory Strings Ensemble. I'm assisting conductor for the Montgomery Philharmonic, which is a community orchestra based in Montgomery County. I'm also music director of the Occasional Symphony, which is a local Baltimore-based orchestra. It's a local grassroots orchestra, mostly Peabody alums or current Peabody students. It's kind of a mixture of Baltimore-based musicians that are kind of in between Peabody and beyond. And I'm really, really proud of that project. I'm really excited by it. But so it really is a balance between those two things. And that pretty much sums up what life is right now. And there's also, of course, job applications for moving forward career-wise and trying to navigate those, you know, stormy waters and trying to figure out what the next path is. And it's hard because for a conductor, you know, the path is really quite different depending on who you talk to. So, you know,
certainly
no rules.
So I guess I'm curious a little bit about, you've got things, it seems like, very compartmentalized. There's your musical life and there's your day job life. How did you end up with those two pieces? Like, what was the process by which you arrived at the piece working in the ensemble office, and how did you arrive at, you know, pick maybe a couple of those ensembles?
Sure. So a couple of the opportunities I was fortunate enough to stumble upon before I graduated. The Chesapeake Youth Symphony Orchestra was something that I had. This is my third year working with them, and the Occasional Symphony, this is my second year with them. So it's kind of been a bit of a overlap transition. So I would probably start by saying, that coming out of Peabody, the first idea was, okay, I've got these small opportunities. How can I supplement it and actually support my life? And the next step was, interviewing and ultimately getting a job with the ensemble office. And so that was a next step. And so now I have this full-time job and then I have to balance everything out. So that was really the biggest challenge. You're right. As you mentioned, it's a bit about compartmentalizing, but even still, this is my second year with the ensemble office. It's not really an easy thing to do. Particularly, you know, after work, it's hard to find. You know, when you're a full-time musician, you can spend all the time you want in the practice room outside of class. And there's, you know, there might be a 2 or 3 hour chunk of time in the middle of your day where you can focus on that. But, you know, to wake up in the morning and tell yourself, I have, you know, this 8-9 hour job left in front of me. I have to spend these couple hours in the morning practicing or studying and then really finding what works for you in terms of what how you're going to work and how you're going to keep that that fire in the belly going, you know, in terms of musical inspiration and how to work. So I think the balance part is always an ongoing process. And I think any advice for young musicians who are just graduating and coming out of school is that's something that you just keep on working, and it's not something that you kind of find out a way and then, okay, then you're set, and it kind of goes. Cause especially in the music world, you know, it finds its way to, you know, throw curveballs at you.
The work is never over.
No, that's right. That's right. You'll never be satisfied with the, you know, a practice session. Then darn it, I have to leave. I have to go do this other thing. I have to turn this other part of my brain on.
Right.
Do some other stuff.
So, I guess walking this back a little bit farther, you were at Peabody for your master's, right? So was there things that you did while you were in school that set you up for the situations that you have now? So were there things that, you know, kind of helped you prepare or made you qualified for the ensemble job, or that connected you with some of these ensembles that you're now working with? And how did you go about setting that up? I'm kind of looking to, like, what were the things, the groundwork that you laid during your student career?
One thing that some people may not know about me, in my undergrad, I pursued a secondary career path in computer science, and doing things with file organization and things like that. Those kinds of things really intrigue me. So coming out of school, I was really hoping to find something along those lines, something organizational, something that I can work with technology, something that I can kind of utilize a couple of these other things. And I think ultimately it was just about asking the questions during school, what other interests do I have within the musical realm? I know a number of musicians who are interested in arts and arts administration, and they find those things while they're doing their schooling. And then, you know, some other, you know, people who, you know, come out of school not knowing what to do, and then they stumble across it. I would advise trying to find a certain skill set, not necessarily that you know, that you have to be really excellent at something, but that you have an idea of, gosh, I want to be a professional musician. It's going to be the grind coming out of school. You know, if I don't, you know, win that, you know, super lucky audition immediately, to find something that will engage you enough that you can have energy after that to really work on what you want to be doing. And that's not to say that you should ever, like, that I feel that I'm limited by having to not work on music all the time, but I think to answer your question, it's just about, I was just kind of in the right place at the right time, and that's kind of the unfortunate part about it, but finding something that you can latch onto, that you can extend the musical life from.
I'm wondering if there are any particular things that you want to talk about that have been surprising after you left school. We've talked a little bit about, like, the self-administration side. Are there other things that, you know, kind of popped up?
Another thing that really surprised me was how rich the Baltimore music scene really is. Because when you're here again, you're you know, focused on things here, but when you're outside, Baltimore has a lot going for it. And I would also encourage any musicians trying to find a way to explore those connections while you're in school. Absolutely, because I mean, there's just so much richness in the Baltimore area, and you know, different organizations are taking their different turns, but I think there's a lot that Baltimore has to offer, and there's a lot that the Baltimore community wants to hear. There's a lot that they want to experience, and exploring that has also been a surprising thing in a really good way.
Do you have any particular experience you want to?
Oh yeah. coming into Occasional Symphony, we have this big Halloween concert, and so we have we put up a silent film, and we accompany it with a full orchestra, and we fill in the pieces with commissions from new composers. We commission 5 or 6 new composers to write for bits and pieces of the film, and then we fill in the rest with core repertoire as kind of sees fit. And this is kind of an event of the year for me. I've done this twice now, and composers look forward to it, musicians look forward to it. We have sold out shows. It's really an exciting thing because it mixes expectation of, you know, a Halloween experience of this silent film with classical music, and also supporting new music and different composers. You know, composers love to write for film, I found, especially if they haven't done it before. It's really a intriguing and challenging process, and it's always rewarding. And you know, it's that by far, I think that's one of the strongest experiences that I've had in Baltimore. Just the electricity of the crowd when something happens, when a cue lines up really well, after the performance, where you know, talking to people who have never come to a classical music concert before, who say that, you know, they had no idea what to expect. They had seen this silent film before. Gosh, I love Murnau's silent film, but I've never seen Faust done that way. Or, you know, it's really interesting to see that people in Baltimore who come to these kinds of performances are really open-minded. And I think that creates a space for Peabody musicians to really make their mark in their own unique way in the community. And it seems like school is the limiting factor, but ultimately the goal is for you to leave school well-equipped to deal with that. And I think that Baltimore is a really unique place to develop those skills, I think.
I'm going to go back to something, and this is because it's been, you touched on it, and it's been very important to me as I've kind of transitioned out of school. And that's this idea of, well, when we're in school, we have this scaffolding, particularly of peers who are working and motivated with us and trying to either create that motivation, because that peer motivation I find to be very powerful. Working with people, being around people who are like interested in similar topics, working hard on similar things, makes it much easier to keep the fire in the belly, as you said. So I'm wondering if there's anything you've done to kind of create peer groups now that you're not in school anymore, or other strategies. Have you completely lost that kind of set of help?
No. I think not entirely, because all of us who graduated in my year or the year after, those colleagues are dealing with the same kinds of problems, the same kinds of issues. We're all applying for the same jobs because there aren't that many of them. But I found that community really wonderful here. I still keep in touch with them. There are a couple friends that I have that we, we'll say, let's, tackle or study a score together, or let's find a way to keep each other accountable. I think one thing that's really popular in science fields and in the medical field is writing accountability groups, especially for, people who are writing, grant proposals or papers or things like that. I think just knowing that there's someone else who's going through the same kinds of issues, or somebody that you can talk to or ask questions about, I think that's really important, because I think, conductors get together, or, musicians get together and talk about careers. They talk about all of that kind of stuff. And, that's all well and good, especially if you want to keep in touch with them, you want to know how they're doing and they want to know how you're doing. But I think it's all the more enriching if you can find people that you can talk to about the things that you want to be working towards, the musical goals that you have, the questions that you have unanswered, or, you know, gosh, I pulled this away from school and 2 years out of school, now I'm finding something entirely different. And how do I deal with that? Do I go back to school and ask more questions about it? Or do I just kind of move along my merry way? Or gosh, I had this technical breakthrough on my own entirely, and I don't know how to deal with it. Or, you know, how do I, so I think musicians are really resourceful at finding their own small communities that they can really engage with these questions. And I think you're right. I think that's really an important thing to establish while you're here at school, and then continue to nurture while you're out of school. Everybody's busy, and you know, finding time to hang out with your friends is not so easy when you're not in school.
So you've spoken a lot now about we were just talking about the importance of, you know, creating your own kind of support network, but also about building connections within the Baltimore community. So what are, networking is something, when we've talked to students, everybody kind of gets their hackles up and thinks that it's the dirtiest thing they could be doing, but you seem like it's something that you do. I mean, everybody has to do it.
It's tough because you feel like, you know, you don't want to come across as networking with somebody for the sake of networking with somebody, and they can, you know, people can see through that. As I've realized the hard way, it's one of those things that you have to be doing all the time. And even that sentence is really scary because it means that you have to be doing something, but ultimately it's just about a different framework of mind. You want to attend concerts. You want to, while you're in school, I know so many musicians who just never wanted to go to concerts because they want to practice and that's all well and good. But I think that I think networking is about finding people that you resonate with musically and then establishing that connection in those terms. And once you establish that in those terms, then it's good. For example, you're part of an ensemble, or you get asked to sub somewhere at some church job, and then you meet so-and-so musician and you develop a connection through that. You know, sometimes it really is just knowing one person, finding your way to the next thing, and then developing relationships with other people. It's not a science. It's scary, but it's just kind of a thing that you have to do, and a thing that ultimately you want to do. I want to sing more of this music. I would love to play more chamber music with these people, or gosh, that, you know, this musician really understands this music or has an interesting opinion about it. Why don't I go and ask him about it? So for me, these are just questions that I ask rather than saying that I've actually done them, because I don't know, but it's, ultimately the goal of networking is to be able to find a balance between having people be advocates for your work and being advocates for other people's work. And I think that's a really beautiful interchange when it comes to professional music in the freelance sense. So, yeah. I think it's just, yeah.
No, that was well put. Yeah, because there's definitely, the two things I was going to tack on there as I've been thinking about networking, is that I think that it's often mistakenly thought as a very active, like one actively networks, yeah, rather than passive networking. Mm-hmm. Networking is something that underlies all your other actions. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you are necessarily want to be actively networking with somebody. And then, of course, yeah, there's this idea that networking is only about your own gains rather than about this passive growth of the musical community at large, which is like when you were talking about kind of the Baltimore musical community and your additions and place within it, I think you spoke to really well. Mm-hmm. When we're in school, we have very clear delineated mentors that we work with and they're assigned to us. I'm kind of curious about what do you have mentors now that you're outside of school, and how do those relationships look different from how they looked when you were in school?
I think when you're in school, you have this enormous advantage of time with your teacher or your mentor. You have the ability to ask any questions that you want regarding the music, and you absolutely should. Career things, finding ways to, gain as much out of the experience as you can. Developing relationships with those kinds of mentors after you leave is definitely a different thing, as you mentioned. How specifically, you have less face time with them. The spontaneity of questions is not necessarily something that you can rely on anymore. I think you have to sort of be strategic about the things that you want to ask and the kinds of questions, the burning questions that you have that are unique to their experience. And I think one thing about having a really good mentor is having a mutual relationship of respect such that you know that, you've got them in your back pocket in certain scenarios, or they'll vouch for you in different scenarios. And also that you can feel free to go to them with that it's not so much of an imposition. I think that's really hard. For me specifically, I really struggle to impose myself on other people, other teachers, other mentors from my past. And I think every time that I reach out with a question or something, they're always very willing to answer. So I think one thing to keep in mind is that, people are, teachers, teachers are really willing to give so much to their students if they're just asked. I mentioned I work with the Chesapeake Youth Symphony. I work with primarily third to sixth graders, and I love it when my young bassist comes up to me and says, "What song do I have to learn to move up to the next ensemble?" Or, we're talking about bow holds, and they're like, you're talking about, bunny ears, and what does this mean? Do I put this here? And, it's just, for me, that's a real joy to get those kinds of questions. And I have to get myself out of the mindset that because I'm in a conservatory, that teachers are not going to respond the same way. I think that's a different thing. I found myself in very fortunate positions to have wonderful, wonderful, wonderful mentors. And I think that that's one thing that kind of keeps me going, is that I want to kind of bring that lineage on. And I think that a really good mentor is also helps you gain skills not only in your craft, but also how to teach that craft as well. Again, you're in school to learn how to learn. So, ultimately you have to be able to teach yourself how to do something. When I open up a score, does my experience at Peabody studying with Marin Ossoff, how is this going to, how is my experience going to help enrich this experience for me? How am I going to approach this score differently? How am I going to, prepare this or show this sound, show this? And so now I've got all these questions and not necessarily all the answers, because as I mentioned, a lot of that comes with experience, but those kinds of questions are great so that I can help, you know, teach those things later on, or, you know, approach different issues later on. So I think that's a long-winded way to answer your question, but I think that each person's relationship with their mentor is going to be different. Always assume the best and come with burning questions, I guess.
That was a great answer. So the kind of two last things I want to touch on, I don't know if there's anything burning that you would want to say to current students, any advice or words of recent alumni wisdom. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are things that I want to say, and things that I should say. No, I'm just kidding.
Go for both. No.
Just strike that out. Don't let your curiosity for music end at the start and ends of your lessons, classes and ensemble rehearsals. For me, coming out of school, understanding what it really means to be a professional musician, what it really means to grasp performance practice, style, things like that. It really comes down to listening a lot, you know, reading literature about composers that interests you, or about music, and trying to find your own way. I think it's really easy when you're at school to go with the flow, to, you know, especially if you're in a program that's really busy, they have you doing a lot. You know, you're required to do all these chamber ensembles, all these large ensembles, all these choruses and classes and seminars and, you know, these new initiative classes. You know, you're now taught that you need to think more entrepreneurially. You can't let that inhibit your love for the music and your desire to know more about it beyond. Music needs to also be a hobby outside of the class, outside, instead of just, you know, this is my job and therefore I do it at these times and then I turn off. Don't get me wrong, I think it's really important to have a life. Goodness knows that I don't know how to really make that balance. It's really hard to do work, music, and life. I think I remember seeing a pie chart of you can pick two. You know, you can pick, you know, work and life, and life and music, but, you know, you have to find some way to have a balance.
I think sleep somewhere in that.
Isn't sleep somewhere in there as well? Yeah.
Since we spoke, Ryan has moved to continue his conducting education at Yale School of Music, but he is still the music director here in Baltimore for the Occasional Symphony. You can check out their upcoming projects at occasionalsymphony.org.